What's up, Atlanta? Happy Tuesday with Turtle. Well, fibbing right out the gate. Not so much of a happy Tuesday. Can't lie to you. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the free Odyssey app. It is Chris Thomas tonight. Turtle with you for the full four. And if you happen to catch the Falcons flyover on Sunday, I had quite a few things to say. And I'll share some of those thoughts with you. But more importantly, I have some new ones. Because as this game has aged, to me, it has not aged well. What do I mean by that? I'll explain. Just give me a second. The other and final piece of the puzzle was how were the Vikings going to look on Monday Night Football? Did you see J.J. McCarthy in the fourth quarter? Try 21 points. Okay. So now we have the entire puzzle put together. What are we going to do with it? How do we take the disaster that was this week one matchup versus the Bucs, examine it, break it down, and then flush it? Can you? Can we? That's something I want to talk to you about tonight at 404-726-0929. I think there are lingering aspects from this game that could haunt the Falcons. I also think there are lingering aspects from this game that will be overwhelming positives from the Falcons, including QB1. And how about tight end 1? That was a promising showing. Loved what I saw. Get him more involved, especially if Drake London and Mooney aren't going to be 100%. We know where it all begins and ends. Today, the Falcons brought in some competition. John Parker Romo was signed to the practice squad, and he will be kicking against Younghoe Koo this week. No decision has been made, obviously not yet. Raheem Morris, I believe, speaks again to the media tomorrow. But here's where I stand right now. The importance of this week one game was not merely a win-loss thing, which we know now the Falcons put themselves in a hole in the division. You have to beat Tampa the next time around, and it's going to be in their place. You had them in your place, and you couldn't get it done. And now you face a Vikings team that is red hot coming off of that win, that comeback epic performance against the Bears on Monday Night Football. And you know what the thing is? Their defense didn't even play that great. Their defense is capable of playing much better. I'm not going to say before this I thought it would have been a cakewalk. That's not fair. But I'm certainly a lot more concerned about this game on Sunday than I was before the Falcons played the Bucs in week one. So here's my question to you right now. 404-726-0929. Do you feel better, worse, or about the same going into this Sunday Night Football game? Because there are things to take away, like I said, that could leave you feeling confident. If you feel like the defense just scratched the surface, our defense can also be a lot better. Maybe Xavier Watts catches the ball next time. You know, maybe Jalen Walker or James Pierce register a stat. I think Walker had a couple of tackles, but that was it. And I don't, sidebar real quick, I agree with Mike Bell on this. I know some of you can throw at me at CT Tonight 929 is where you find the show, that James Pierce like led or was tied for second, pressures among rookies. Listen, man, I don't care. You know what the only stat I care about is? It sounds so barbaric and cliche. Win the game, man. I don't care if James Pierce Jr. had 12 pressures. You lost. And you couldn't get Baker Mayfield on the ground. It's funny. I've been having people hit me up on Twitter, again, at CT Tonight 929 is where you find the show. Oh, Turtle, you know, I feel confident because they were close and, you know, we almost got Baker on the ground. And I'm like, guys, what game were you watching? He threw for 3 touchdowns, 2 to a rookie, and he was also their leading rusher. Can we just have an honest conversation about that? Like, oh, almost only count. No, it doesn't. Almost doesn't count in this situation, y'all. You lost the game. You lost the game. And no, it wasn't just because Younghoe Koo missed the potential game-tying kick. He gets a portion of the blame, that's for sure. But it's also because you couldn't stop another late game drive. It's also because one of your top prize defenders couldn't keep his hands off the quarterback. It's also because, again, you got beat over the top for deep plays to a rookie wide receiver, explosive plays, twice. Again, timeouts, situational awareness reared its ugly head again and again and again. This felt like 2024, 2023, 2022, 2021, all over again. Is Michael Penix a difference? Of course he is. Was he great in this game? Yeah, he was. But here's the thing. He threw the ball 40-plus times. What was I pounding the table on all last week? If Michael Penix Jr. throws the ball more than 30 times, that's not a game plan for success for the Falcons. And you know what? It wasn't this time either. Because you know how many yards they ran for? 69 total yards. Bijan Robinson averaged 2 yards a carry. Tyler Allgeier averaged 2.4 yards a carry. You're not going to win games like that. So again, after watching the Vikings last night with that epic comeback and their defense, I know is better than that, I am not as confident about this game on Sunday. My confidence, in all honesty, was a lot higher before they played the Bucs in week 1. Again, I could be wrong, and they could come out and dominate on Sunday night, and I hope they do. But I did not like what I saw for a lot of that game on Sunday. To me, it was more highlights amongst lowlights than it was lowlights amongst highlights. That's how the game felt to me. Because it was the same crap. Couldn't get Baker Mayfield on the ground. Scrambling. Key first downs. Giving up chunk explosive plays that result in touchdowns. Not enough sacks. Not enough quarterback pressures. Not enough making Mayfield feel the rush. None of that. And that's exactly what spoiled the Falcons last year, along with the obvious, which was Kirk Cousins. So 404-726-0929. How do you feel after this game? We got a tough one coming up on Sunday night. These first couple of games for the Falcons, not easy. It could get ugly. Or it could not. Or they could rally. You could see the improvement on the defense that we need to see. And the offense maybe can get out there and establish the run. Because I'll tell you what right now. That's the number one thing, even more so than the kicker. Because I'm going to be honest, you know, again, I said this on Sunday. Much respect for Koo. He's a great teammate, great person, and does great things for the city. But that doesn't matter when you can't do your job. You could be the best person in the world. It's a business, just like anything else. If you're not good at your job, and in this case, not even competent at your job, you're not going to have one for long. You can get a new kicker in here. That's not something I'm concerned long-term about. What I am concerned long-term about is if you can run the ball. Because without Caleb McGarry, the Bucs have a good defensive line. They don't have a top, 10-ish defensive line in football. There are teams that you're going to be facing, including the Vikings. I would argue their defensive front much stronger than the Bucs, especially if they're playing up to their potential, which they did not early on against Caleb Williams and the Bears. So we'll take your calls, 404-726-0929. How do you feel about the Vikings game after not only watching what the Falcons did on Sunday, another choke job, and then the Vikings with the epic comeback on Monday Night Football. Your calls are next, 404-726-0929. Chris Thomas, Turtle with you on a Tuesday, just getting started. 92.9 The Game, and of course, on the free Odyssey app. Poll is up at CT tonight, 929. Make sure you go and vote. We also got full phone lines, so we're not going to waste any time taking your calls. Pretty simple, guys, tonight. I just laid everything out for you. We know about the kicking situation. We know our quarterback looked great. Pitts looked great. We don't know about the health of London and Mooney just yet. A giant mixed bag. A couple of things that were giving me some nightmares from last season. Clock mismanagement coming out of a break. God, how did that happen again? Ugh, I railed on that on the Falcons flyover. It didn't matter. It was inconsequential at the time, unlike some of the ones from last year, but how do you, again, after that was the number one thing that even the owner came out and said we needed to work on, do you mess up the play coming out of a TV timeout? It's almost comical. I mean, it really is. And that was just one of the symptoms of another catastrophic loss for the Atlanta Falcons as they fell 23-20 to the Bucs and now have to face a Viking squad that, yes, for three quarters looked dead in the water, but is there any team riding higher than the Vikings right now after the way their quarterback came to life and shut up all the debt? There was a lot of freezing cold takes. Might be a record set for the amount of time it took for them to get frozen because it was in the course of two quarters of a single football game. Because J.J. McCarthy and the Vikings offense actually absolutely just blitzkrieged the Chicago Bears defense at the end there and really made it a situation that none of us saw coming. I think a lot of us last night were watching that game and thought the Bears were going to win that game comfortably. And then J.J. McCarthy became superhero. 404-726-0929. So how do you feel about the matchup now that week one has concluded? Let's go to Lewis up first. Lewis, lead us off. You're in the game.
Hey, man. I tell you this, I went to the pep rally Friday, happy Saturday, Sunday, saw Bijan score, thought it was going to be a new turnaround. And then after that slowdown, I was like, it's just the same old thing. And definitely after last night, I'm very concerned. Zach Robinson, he needs to do something creative with this offense, and especially with the run game. And I just don't have faith when it comes to our defense, man. So I'm very concerned, not only for this coming Sunday, but for the rest of the season, man.
Yeah, Lewis, I appreciate it. Good stuff leading off. You're 100% right, Lewis, about the run game, right? 69 total yards on the ground when you have Bijan Robinson and Tyler Allgeier? It's unacceptable. You should have had double, triple that. I mean, come on, man. You let Baker Mayfield, on the other side, you let Baker Mayfield do what he does, that slippery snake routine all game long. He was their leading rusher. 404-726-0929. Sam's up next. Sam, what do you think?
What's good, Turtle?
Yo, what up, Sam?
Yeah, my conclusion is this. It's not looking good. We are entering I feel like talent-wise, we are not that far off from Minnesota. But we enter every week in each game this season with a complete coaching mismatch. Raheem Morris is a liability. And the sooner the Falcons fire him, the better off they will be. He has no control over this team. And look, people can talk about in-game stuff. I'm not talking about in-game stuff. I'm talking about off-the-field stuff, the way the kicker position was handled. And then on top of that, who leaves the locker room, ducks accountability. That is a coach who has no control over his team. You approve that BS game plan that Zach Robinson put out? Are you serious? Really? And then you're going to ride with Koo again? What, so we can cost you another game, another two games? Get this guy out of here.
Well, just to be fair, we don't know that yet. And Sam, I appreciate the phone call, appreciate the passion. Just to be fair, we don't know about Koo yet. It has not been announced that he has been replaced just yet. They brought somebody in who has NFL experience for our competition, but Sam, unfortunately, we're going to have to wait at least, I would think, a couple of more days before we get an absolute word on what the kicking situation is going to be for the Falcons. In terms of Raheem, I'm tending to agree. I don't know if he's cut out to be a great head coach. I want him to prove me wrong. I want him and his staff and Jeff Ulbrich and Zach Robinson to prove us wrong, those of us who have our doubts. Honestly, and I tweeted about this yesterday, and I got some pushback, which is fine. Love engaging with all of you. Again, at CT Tonight 929 is where you find it. Didn't love the press conference yesterday. Can't lie. And it's not because he didn't point out things that were wrong. He did. He addressed the kicking situation. He was honest about it. Just, I don't know how y'all felt. And again, I know this. I'm not naive. It's not his job to be overly emotional. It's not his job to throw water bottles or push the podium over. And I wouldn't want that anyway. That's too much. That's childish. But to meet the moment emotionally, I think is something different. I think it's something that you can talk about when it comes to representing how your fan base feels and representing how your constituency feels. And I know we're all angry. And I just got a lot of ho-hum, run-of-the-mill, just pragmatic answers in that press conference yesterday. And I just was looking for something a little bit more. Like another critical loss under your belt, Raheem. And this one to start a season that had so much hope and to lose in the most, I hate to use this term, Falcon of way possible. Like, what are we doing? Mike's up next. Mike, you're in the game. Go ahead.
Yeah. When the game first ended, I felt just like everybody else. But I've had a chance to go back and look at the All 22. And the real blame is on Zach Robinson. Zach Robinson, first off, he didn't account for Vita Vea because he decided that out of nowhere, we just going to start running up the middle. And he's scared to run Elijah Wilkinson's side. The one time he did it with Tyler Allgeier, he got 5 yards a pop. Then, to make matters worse, okay, defensively, we actually did a better job than you would think because Baker did not have a great game. He came through when he's supposed to, but Baker's a dang good quarterback.
And I'll let you finish. That's the key. The Falcons' defense, it was the opposite of bend, don't break. It broke. That's the problem. Because Baker found Egbuka twice in the end zone on huge gains.
I mean, have they not been to the playoffs for the last three years? Like, it's not like we went up against a scrub team. And it's not like they matched up really well with us. We matched up really well with them. They made some plays down the stretch that we didn't make. And yes, you can be upset about that.
Okay, but Mike, when's it our time to make those plays, man? That's what I'm saying. When's the Falcons' time to make those plays?
Hold on, wait a minute. So last year we dropped the game and we had to go into that Philadelphia game and everybody sounded just like they do now. And what do? We pulled it out. So there's precedence for us being able to be a good team. It's not all doom and gloom yet. It's just the first game of the season. We can improve. We can do better. But the original question was, how do I feel with us going into Minnesota? I think we got just as good a chance of winning the Minnesota game as we did Tampa Bay. We got to correct those mistakes. And our OC has got to be better.
Well, Mike, here's the question. Do you think they will? Do you think they will? Mike, to Mike's point, he's not wrong about anything that he said. But, Oren, what it comes down to is Mike set himself up perfectly there at the end. They got to correct those mistakes. Yeah, but, Mike, will they? Have we seen a precedent for that? I'll wait. I mean, guys, 7 years, no playoffs, right? Come on now. Stay with me. 404-726-0929. Nick is up next. Nick, go ahead.
I think your premise is a little wrong. Like, you talk about how you know Minnesota's defense is going to be better, but our defense can also be better. We were close on a lot of plays. We almost had a bunch of interceptions. If one or two of those goes, it's a different game.
So should the Bucks. If we have to be fair.
That's fair. But I also think, you know, Bijan had one play, and he's a much better player than that. I think, you know, Drake going out on the last drive hurt. You know, if that throw to Kadarius Hogg went to Drake, probably a different game. You know, I think there's a lot of positives to be read into what we did. Like, our defense wasn't a sieve like it was last year.
Yeah, no, but it gave up critical plays at the worst time. Nick, but that's what I'm saying. That's why I'm concerned, because it just reminds me of everything that happened last year. You gave up critical chunk plays and costly penalties at the worst possible time.
Last year, we gave up way more points than 23 to lose those games. Like, our defense looked better. We got more pressure on the quarterback. Did we get home enough? No. But I think there's potential there. And if you're going to talk about potential with Minnesota's defense, even though they didn't play great, then you can also talk about potential with Atlanta's defense. And, you know, I think there was a lot of positives. Like, Michael Penix looked good. I think some of the rookies on defense, up and down. But, you know, Xavier Watts had a good play and a bad play. I think, you know, he'll develop. You know, it's one game, and we lost by three. And to be honest, our kicker was the problem. He bounced one off a goalpost that probably shouldn't have gone in, and then missed the next one.
You're glossing over some of the negatives too, Nick. And I appreciate the phone call. Like, you can't just gloss over 69 yards on the ground. That's not gloss overable. And guys, can we be honest about something too? Orin, I need this to be hit home by everybody who's listening. We got one sack on Baker Mayfield without the best left tackle in football playing the game. Can we please remember that? I have not heard that fact stated enough. Yes, I know some pressures, yet blah 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 blah. No. Please let this absorb into everybody's heads. The best left tackle in football was not on the field for Tampa. And that's what your defense gave you in terms of pass rush. Like, we got to just keep it real, right? 404-726-0929, a guy that's going to keep it real. And surprise me, how about Joe Patrick live in studio coming up next? How about that? 404-726-0929. Warren's like, what? Yeah, how about that? He popped in. We're going to have him live in studio. We'll take your calls. 404-726-0929. 404-726-0929. What do you want to ask our Falcons insider? We'll have him talk to you next. Not only does that mean Joe Patrick is here, but he's in studio. How about that? Live and in living color. Our Falcons insider for his weekly visit here on Chris Thomas Tonight. Turtle with you until 10 o'clock. And Joe, so much to get into, so little time.
There is?
I wish there wasn't, man. I really wish this was just like, you know, the Falcons won 30-17.
Yeah.
Michael Penix Jr. shined in the defense, and Pierce had a sack, and Walker had, you know, eight pressures, and
He's going to lead the league this year, you know? Pressures. Lewis Riddick, his prediction was spot on.
All right. let me start here. After watching what Minnesota did last night, coming back, McCarthy caught fire, defense played much better in the second half, and then watching what we did on Sunday, how do you feel about this game? Did your mood, mindset change about this game at all after taking in both the Falcons and then the Vikings?
It's funny you said that, because I actually do have thoughts on kind of the way that I think this game is going to go versus the way that I think Lions, like odds makers, are going to have it go. And I'm probably more optimistic than you're going to be wanting to hear from me here, Chris.
I just want the truth, man.
I'm not a believer in J.J. McCarthy at this point. I think Kevin O'Connell did a great job with him last night. I think Kevin O'Connell is the best play caller in the NFL right now. And I think that because that Minnesota Vikings have Kevin O'Connell, he gives them a chance to win basically every single game because what they have on defense, in addition to his play calling. But I'm just not impressed with J.J. McCarthy, and I think that this Falcons defense, while, yes, they didn't really get home on a lot of sacks that you would have wanted to see, I think they did show like the green shoots that you wanted to see, especially from these young players that can give a young quarterback making his second start in the NFL, like J.J. McCarthy will be, I think they can give him fits and potentially get him to turn the ball over once or twice. That will be great. Now, I think on the other hand, there are some very legitimate concerns with what you saw from the offensive line and how well that's going to be able to improve when you get into a really hostile, maybe the loudest environment in the NFL in Minnesota next week. So,
and the Vikings have a much better defensive front
than the
Bucs.
No doubt. Yeah, yeah. And they don't have Vita Vea, but they do have like just a lot of like dynamic players along that front that are going to cause problems for this team. And so they're going to have to make some adjustments with what they do in the run game especially and try to and figure that out. I don't think it's going to get any easier this week, but I just feel like defensively they can, you know, we talked about, you know, this defense maybe was never going to be one that kept points off the board to a great extent, but could at least turn teams over, make some game-changing plays in that respect. And I think that this is a week where we can potentially really see that come to fruition.
How much longer until we get this kicker thing figured out?
Well, hopefully it starts getting figured out this week. I mean, I would be really surprised if Younghoe Koo's kicking for this team in Minnesota. And if John Parker Romo, the new practice squad kicker, who I expect to be elevated onto the active roster to the, you know, to the game day roster on Sunday, if he makes his kicks, he's going to be this team's kicker. Now, whether he actually does that, you know, we have to wait and see. Maybe a little silver lining here is that he has experience kicking in Minnesota, where he kicked for four games last year. It was 11 for 12 for them, and that's where they will obviously be this weekend, but you never know. It's always kind of scary when you have to get in bed with a new kicker, but you know, sometimes you got to get in bed with a new partner every once in a while. You know, things grow stale, things grow old, you know, things start to go awry, and you gotta find that life source again.
Don't tell me that. I just celebrated my 1 year anniversary.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Joe. Sorry.
Don't tell me that.
1 year with a great kicker is, you know, things are going great.
Well, the Falcons had that with young
Waku. Right. And can I say, like, it's tough with Koo because and just kicking in general, it's such a psychological hurdle that he has to clear when you start getting into this rut. It's not just about, you know, a kicker's talent and that talent eventually coming through, because you need him to make kicks this week. Like you can't just wait for a kicker to get right. You've got to find that solution. And I think that, you know, that's the problem with signing a kicker, any kicker really, but, you know, Younghoe Koo was signed to a multi-year contract, and now that money feels like it's, you know, a little bit down the drain. It's not obviously a ton of money in comparison to other players, but still, this is a team that can use every dollar on the salary cap they can with the mistakes that have been made on that front. So it'll be interesting to see how John Parker Romo gets on, but as long as he can just make the kicks, that's all this team needs. And like, not even anything special. If he can just got to be basically perfect inside of 50 yards, which is pretty standard for an NFL kicker these days.
Just better than what Riley Patterson was at the end of the year.
By
the way, when Koo, here's how you knew the situation is what it is. When he spoke to the media and started getting all technical about his kicks and the turf and the placement, like, you sunk your own battleship there.
Yeah, that's a tough one. And I get it, because like, he's asked why. Like he's asked why and he's trying to give an answer, but still it never looks good. You know, what fans want is some good old-fashioned self-flagellation there. You know, you just got to whip yourself on the back and say, you know, I did a bad job.
Here's my next thing. Really didn't love Zach Robinson's game plan, especially in short yardage. I just thought, I was just thinking as these plays were developing, like, first of all, why are you running outside with Bijan Robinson to try to get 1 yard? Why are you?
Because they can't run inside.
Yeah, but the thing is, but then you take Tyler Allgeier and you try to run him inside and you get stuff. So what did you make of the game plan?
I'm with you, Chris, and I've got the questions lined up ready for him tomorrow. You know, it's funny that the Falcons have been doing media. The coordinators are going at the same time as open locker room. And typically we like to be in open locker room because you want to talk about you want to hear from the players more than anybody else. But tomorrow, I think there's pertinent questions for Zach Robinson. The thing that frustrates me, Chris, is it's the pistol and shotgun setups in like fourth and one or short, you know, you need inches and you're snapping the ball back 4 yards. And, you know, and that makes it difficult. By the way, it's not just the fact that the ball is going away from the line of scrimmage. it starts with the center. The center has to make an accurate snap to the quarterback. And so if he's doing that, he's not able to fire off as quickly against those big guys up front that he has to move off the spot in order for the team to successfully run up the middle in those situations. And so I think that's why we've seen, you know, several times, like Drew Dahlman, for example, last year obviously had issues with the snap when they were in shotgun in some of those situations. And I even saw some, you know, obviously none to the extent that Dahlman's were at times last year, but they were not always accurate. And I give the center some leeway. I did play it in high school, so maybe that's one of the reasons why.
No,
but
you got your
it's tough. It's,
bona fides.
When you're having to snap the ball back like that and fire off the ball and try to move Vita Vea, it's like you're asking him to do an impossible task.
Well, the Falcons also ask a lot of climbing to the next level, mm-hmm. taking on blocks from linebackers. So totally understand what you're saying. Level of concern, Mooney and London.
London, I'm concerned. I think Mooney's going to – I would expect him to return this week, frankly. I mean, we've seen him. He's been practicing now for a couple weeks, maybe 3 weeks since he first got back on the grass. And I definitely – you know, he was playing last week. He said that he was not being held back. We obviously can't watch the full practices like we were during training camp. We only see the first 15 minutes, but – what I have seen in those 15 minutes, they've been running some drills where they just literally throw bombs to the guys. It's a fun one to watch because the receivers just run 50 yards and Penix throws them a bomb downfield. And Darnell Mooney's running super fast, and you would expect that. You know, it was a shoulder injury. It's not like it was a lower body thing. So
it sounds like a clear for contact.
Exactly,
situation.
Exactly. It sounds like that. And he was specifically asked that when he, you know, finally talked to media last week, and he didn't suggest that that was part of it, but also I don't know how much you can actually believe a player talking about an injury situation. So it sounds to me like it's once he's cleared medically, then he's going to be full go, which I would expect this week.
Talking with our insider Joe Patrick here. Make sure you check out the podcast, Joe Patrick on Football. I know some people are saying no big deal, some people are saying big deal. One sack total on Baker without the best left tackle in football. To me, you needed more.
You do need more. I thought that when I rewatched the game this morning, and I felt like the rushers, I felt like they actually had more time to get to the quarterback than they're used to. Like, I felt like in Jimmy Lake's system, because they played so much off coverage, they felt like they had to get to the quarterback immediately. And what I saw was Baker Mayfield kind of dropping back and then not having that open guy like he was accustomed to, which was kind of nice. You see him patting the ball a little bit in the pocket, but it felt like the rushers were in such a rush to get to him, they were leaving him some then open avenues to get out of the pocket, and it almost felt like if they had just kind of been a little bit more patient in their rush lane, he was either going to run right into them or the pocket was ultimately going to collapse around them. So it feels to me like there are some positives there to build off of, but it's just you got to kind of get it all in sequence with the defense at the right time. But I thought it was promising showing defensively, Chris. I mean, like, you know, they were able to at least get pressures. I think they were third in the NFL this week in overall pressure rate. You know, Jeff Ulbrich was also bringing blitzes quite frequently, bringing five. But I thought even those blitzes were effective with either Caden Ellis or Divine Diablo coming up through those A-gaps and creating havoc in the middle of the pocket. So I'm actually pretty optimistic with what they showed on that side of the ball.
Well, highlight Diablo. He gets a gold star.
Oh, yeah. And I'm going to give myself a gold star, by the way, too, because I said that I felt like he was a player that nobody was talking about, myself included, by the way, because it's hard to really understand, like, when you're watching training camp practice, like, is the linebacker actually doing a good job? Like, it's hard to see the run fits in general. You don't know what the coverages are. It's hard to know whether they're actually doing their job. But just when you look at him, it's like, wow, that guy looks like a great football player. He's like big, long, rangy, strong guy. And then you combine that with the way that Raheem Morris talks about him, not just generally how smart they think he is and all that, but just how impressed that he clearly was with him since he got in, and he showed it. He made some great plays, and he used exactly the kind of tools that we saw, you know, that range to get out in coverage or, you know, put arms up and when he's rushing the passer. I thought it was really good from him.
What did you make of the Rukurororo roughing play? It's kind of tough to diagnose, in my opinion. He needs to hold up at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And I said as much, but he also, like, I don't think he was being egregious either. It was tough.
I agree. And, you know, it was interesting that the refs got together and kind of talked about it for a while before they ultimately, I mean, they threw the flag immediately, but then, like, they kind of debated it. And I kind of thought they may have picked it up because when you do start talking about it, I'm sure that they were talking about how light the contact was, but also they're probably thinking, you know, we might get in trouble by the league if we don't, you know, go ahead and call this. So it was obviously very light. And yeah, it's like, you know, nothing that anybody hasn't heard, but you just can't put that in the ref's hands. You got to make sure that that's just not an option for them to call. So it was a pretty brutal penalty in the context.
Before I let you go, what the hell happened on special teams, man?
Exactly. I know that obviously the missed field goal and everything gets a lot of play, but also Koo missing the touchdown or the touchback zone, whatever, the landing zone. You had a big punt return that led to a Tampa Bay touchdown. That's basically a turnover. It was a 58-yard punt and a 59-yard return. That's a turnover. And you had another, the last drive of the game when the Bucs needed that field goal, and they ultimately do score a touchdown on it. They give up a big kickoff return to the 37-yard line that sets it up. So in the modern NFL, from there, you only need like 30 yards, and then you're in range. And it just put them under pressure. So, yeah, Marquise Williams, I know that, you know, that was been an emphasis for them this offseason, but they got to get that stuff cleaned up.
All right, Joe, next time we talk, I want to be talking about a dub.
I do, too.
I really do. I
think it's winnable. I mean, I think these are winnable games they got coming up.
It is. What J.J. McCarthy showed me in the fourth quarter yesterday are the exact things that happen at the end of Falcons games.
Mm. Yeah,
where they have a lead, you're winning, you feel good, and then all of a sudden in the fourth quarter, it unravels in the most nightmarish way possible.
Mm-hmm. But Penix is showing that he can kind of pull it out of his butt, too.
And that could be the difference. And I thought it was going to be the difference.
Yeah, I know. Seriously. Should have been. Should have been the difference. Should have been the difference.
Because he should have gotten the chance.
Yeah.
And then they should have been able to hopefully win the face-off, get marched down the field and score. And that would have been all she wrote. But all right, my friend, appreciate you hopping on in studio. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. Thanks, Chris.
All right. That is Joe Patrick there. Yeah. We'll continue to take your calls on the other side. 404-726-0929. 404-726-0929. How you feeling about this Vikings game? Better? Worse? About the same? After seeing what they did last night and seeing what the Falcons couldn't do on Sunday afternoon. We'll be back with your calls. Also, what are the five biggest questions after week one? We'll get into that as well. It's Chris Thomas tonight. Turtle with you till 10 o'clock on 92.9 The Game.